Welcome to Hidden History of Rock and Roll with your host, Tiffany Scott. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Hidden History of Rock and Roll.
Hello, and welcome to Hidden History of Rock and Roll. I'm your host, Tiffany Scott. If you are new to my podcast, I do a deep dive into the behind-the-scenes stories of rock's greatest legends, how they came to be, how the records got played, and maybe some dirty secrets, if we're lucky. This is your all-access backstage pass. Today, I get to introduce you to another industry legend and my good friend, Tommy Nast. Tommy's career spans a whopping 50 years in the music industry. He has done promotion, marketing, content creation and distribution, broadcast syndication, artist management, concert promotion, and print media. He has done it all. Welcome to the show, Tommy Nast.
Tiffany, thank you so much. And it's a pleasure to sit next to you and see and hear how good you are doing with this podcast. Tremendous.
Thank you so much.
You've had some great guests so far. And it's like, you know, when I think about your dad, John Scott, and Steve Meyer, and Paul Rappaport, being in that group is awesome. And thank you for having me.
Well, it's awesome. And I'm doing this live for the first time, which is really exciting. You have an amazing voice, too.
You know, I did a little radio over the years and that. And it's like, you know, when I started at 2 years old in the business, I was able to talk pretty well. And I got my first radio job when I was seven, you know, so.
I could see that. And the chicks dig you with your hair.
Yeah, exactly. I used to have good hair. I guess I still do.
You have lovely hair.
Thank you very much. So do you.
Well, thank you. Well, we can go down the list of artists that you have worked with. How about you allow me to introduce them as well?
By all means.
So you've worked with Van Halen, Sammy Hagar, Kiss, Bryan Adams, Rush, The Black Crowes, Bon Jovi, and Michael Bolton. Those are just to name a few, correct?
That's a few bands that I have some stories on and can share. And there's been so many more. I've been blessed to have been working with so many good bands over the years from my days in radio and going forward to what I do now in the film distribution world, and that it's just been an amazing run, an amazing ride.
That's awesome. So you want to start from the beginning and tell the listeners how you got started into the music industry?
Sure. I mean, I was always, as a kid, loving listening to the radio. And growing up in Rochester, New York, I, you know, was listening to some great jocks then, and then moved to California and finished high school and went to LA City College out here and took radio broadcasting in college. And at the time, listening to Wolfman Jack and Shadow Stevens and so many Jim Ladd and the KMET days, the original KMET and KLOS days. And it was amazing. And I, after my first year of college radio, I went back to Rochester, New York. And I had air checks made, and I said, I'm going to go in and see if I can get a job on the radio there. And I went to all these various stations and got turned down for the most part. And the last one that I went to was a station that I grew up listening to called WSAY. And I went in, and the program director looked at me, and I had my hair down my shoulders and a burgundy jacket with a diamond brooch on it. And I was very much into the glitter rock scene at the time.
Sweet.
And they just happened to have an opening there. And he said, will you read these things for me and talk to me a bit? And next thing I knew, he said, well, we have a morning opening. Can you start? But it's like, we pay minimum wage and you'll work from 6 to noon and you'll be Tommy Thomas. Because the station had three jocks, Tommy Thomas, Jerry Jack, and Mike Melody. And for years, and when they hired people, you assumed that name.
Wow.
So when I came in there, this was the summer of 73, and they were playing a top 40 format where you played the first 45 and then put it to the back of the, you know, the bin. And The receptionist at the station downtown would send the music over that they got. And I went through their library, and they had this unbelievable library of albums and things like that. And I went to the PD there and said, hey, can I throw in some of these album cuts? And he goes, well, you can, but if you get caught by the owner, you know, no telling what's going to happen. And so we did, and we started to kind of change the format and make it an AM rock station in 1973, which was pretty unheard of. And I took the name Tommy Thomas and just started calling myself TT. And I was like going, TT raging on the radio, baby. And we played music at the time from Montrose, Kiss, David Bowie, Silverhead, Slade, Mott the Hoople, and so many other bands. And that's kind of how I started in radio. And it's, you know, from there I went on to a top 40 station that I also had the pleasure of growing up with, WBBF. So that was an awesome time. But so the first gig, though, was 1973 at WSAY, where we broke so many bands that, you know, it was unbelievable and a fun time.
So you were a pioneer.
I guess so, but I was a fan that was lucky to be on the radio and being able to do my thing and did pretty well with it at the time.
You have photos you can share with me and share with the listeners.
I don't know if I have any pictures from. Yeah, I've got some old photos, but you know, we got some good stuff that we can share that you could put up there, I'm sure.
That's great. Yeah, the photos are the best. The old photos.
Yeah. Oh, I got a lot, and you know, you've seen a number of them, you know, it's, you know, over the years I've been doing this, it's just like every day I still remember something new that comes into mind, and it's awesome.
That is great. That is wonderful. So let's go and jump into some of the bands that you've worked with. My all-time favorite is Van Halen. So I think you have some really awesome stories that you can share with us.
I do, and it was a pleasure working with them. And it's funny because back to my first radio station there, one of the albums that I thought was the most influential and probably my all-time favorite hard rock album was the first Montrose album that featured Sammy Hagar on it. And I played the hell out of that record. And to this day, I think it's one of the most influential, and people will always, you know, point to that as being such a great masterpiece that inspired them. And so much to the fact that as Van Halen came out and I became a huge fan of Van Halen, I'd found out that Van Halen used to cover songs from the first Montrose album when they were playing. So, you know, when Sammy, who I loved to death and had a tremendous solo career and still, I mean, his tour is going to be mind-blowing this year. Sammy did just tremendous. And the Van Halen guys, my God, it was like, you know, what they did was spectacular. I always loved working with them. And it's funny because working through the time when Dave was the singer and, you know, seeing Sam come in, and seeing Gary Cherone come in, and being able to have a relationship and friendship for the most part with all of the guys, maybe not so much Roth anymore, but they were in one of my all-time favorite bands. Van Halen will always go down as one of the best, if not the best, hard rock band, in my opinion.
Mine too. And what was your role exactly with them?
You know what? It's funny because I was lucky to be able to play them on the radio during my time doing 10 years of radio. When I came into the album network, being able to promote them to radio stations, we would, you know, oh my gosh, every time a Van Halen record came out, it's like, are you kidding? This is great. And we promote the hell out of it and do that. Then when we started a syndicated radio network and were able to do national radio shows and world premieres, and being able to take the new Van Halen album with Sammy at the time, it was tremendous. And being able to interview them and have a friendship with them, and go behind the scenes with them, And kind of, you know, during a period of time, I was a pretty good insider with them and, you know, had the utmost respect and so much fun over the years with all the guys.
Any inside stories or hidden histories that you can share?
Hidden histories. You know, it's funny. There was a lot of, you know, fun times and even... I did go on the road with David Lee Roth when Dave left Van Halen, and I did a couple of shows with him, which was crazy. And I was interviewing him for our syndicated show Power Cuts that we did, that I used to do the nasty news on, along with the late Gino Michelini, who hosted it, who was tremendous. And we were in St. Louis and Kansas City, and I think it was the St. Louis show. We did the tour bus with him. I was on the bus with the guys and that. But at the show, I'm sitting backstage with Dave, and it's, okay, let's do an interview. Let's, are you ready? And kind of getting set up like we did here. Mm-hmm. And as we're sitting down, three strippers come in and take off the clothes and start doing this whole lap dance and stuff to Dave while we're doing the interview.
No.
And I'm like going, oh my God, are you shitting me? Can I say that on this
yes,
here?
Okay. You can. We're explicit.
It was like, wow. And just doing the interview while Dave's being lap danced, tongued, and, you know, everything going on. And it was like, oh yeah, hey, Tommy, yeah, no worries. All good, man. And it was like just one of the funny behind the scenes things that happens.
Rockstar life. Hello.
It was fun. And, you know, more stories with Sammy, Mike, you know, Alex and Eddie were as kind and cordial to me over the years as anyone. And, you know, I'll always have gratitude to them and miss Eddie to death, you know, for all that he did and, you know, what a great person he was. And he had one hell of a sense of humor. And I don't want to, I had a feeling you might be asking me another question about Eddie that one of your friends wanted to do, but I'll save that story for that one.
For later. Yeah, that's fine. But yeah, I had the opportunity to meet Eddie just a few times at my dad's golf tournaments, and he was a funny guy. He was definitely funny. And, you know,
he liked to have fun.
He liked to have fun.
And could he play the guitar or what? I mean, you know,
there's no one better
today. I mean, it's like, to me, it's like Jimi Hendrix, Eddie Van Halen, Jimi Hendrix, Eddie Van Halen. Some people throw, well, what about Eric Clapton? What about, you know, Jimmy Page? And it's like, I don't know.
Eddie Van
Halen.
Nobody
had the impact to me that when it comes to guitarists that Eddie had. And if Jimi Hendrix lived longer, perhaps he would have been the ultimate, but
yeah, I agree with you 100%.
If you are enjoying listening to Hidden History of Rock and Roll, please consider becoming a friend of the show on Patreon for only $5 a month. Your support will help deliver more excellent content. Plus, as a member, get your questions answered by the next legendary guest. Thanks for being the best part of Hidden History of Rock and Roll.
So, Tommy, tell me, what can you tell us about your time working with the band Kiss?
It's funny about Kiss. I go back with Kiss back to the first radio station that I was at, again, WSAY. And it's funny because so many of the bands that I played there just kind of came with me. You know, they were part of my fabric, my DNA. I was always into them. When the first Kiss album came out, I played Strutter like crazy from that album. That was one of my all-time favorite songs from them, and there were so many other great songs that they did. And then Kiss played Rochester at one point at a venue there, and I went to the show, and this was a few years after when they came out. It was probably about 75, 76, and I'm backstage. And I had a girlfriend with me at the time who was very pretty and very voluptuous. And, you know, everybody was like looking at her and checking her out. And so we're at the side backstage of the stage. And one of the stagehands apparently was like looking at her and missed some cue. And Gene Simmons got like so pissed off. And he took a bottle of wine or something that was on the stage and he threw it at my girlfriend.
Oh my God.
And it was like, what the hell did just happen? And we left. We got, I was ready to jump on the stage and cause a commotion. And we left the area and I went back on the air that night and started, these guys suck. And here's what, I can't believe that they did this when we've been supporting them. You know, the Casablanca VPs apologized, sent flowers, did this and that. As time went on and, you know, the band went on their way and they were doing great. And I went into Los Angeles and started working at the Album Network magazine and became friends again with them. And even, you know, their management, you know, Doc McGee is one of the best of all time. And it's funny, when Kiss, several years back, released the Sonic Boom album, they did this themselves. It was self-contained. There wasn't a major label. And they hired myself and my partner at the time, Craig Lambert, when we had Rock Band Entertainment, to do promotion. And I got with Gene after. And I said, Gene, I got to tell you this. You know, you may not remember this, but do you know that you did this? And it was like, probably did, sure, you know. And Gene gets a lot of grief for whatever reasons, you know. And I can say Gene and Paul were always top-notch professional, great at what they did. And I'll always have the utmost respect for what they did. And even, you know, I mean, look, Tommy Thayer coming in and, you know, Eric Singer, great guys. Kiss was awesome, but... another band that from day one, when I played them, when the first album came out as a current, through what they did in their career, it was amazing to be able to work with them. And, you know, like I said, always have the utmost respect for all they've done in the business.
They were marketing geniuses, actually. And
I mean, come on, a Kiss coffin? I mean, some of the things that they put out there were just incredible. And, you know, what a Kiss pinball machine probably sells for so much money now if you're able to get one at some point. It's, you know,
it's about
amazing.
20 grand, yeah. I believe. I've been doing some research on Kiss memorabilia recently.
It's amazing what they've done. And, you know, I wish them all well with whatever they're going to be doing in the future solo-wise. And, you know, look forward to seeing what they do with how they've captured their last shows and what they're going to create and bring forward.
Yeah, Gene is terrific. He is unbelievable. And I heard through the grapevine that you have a really funny story about Michael Jackson. This is kind of totally, you know, off from Kiss, but I heard that you had a really great story and I wanted to hear it.
Michael Jackson, when I was at Album Network, Michael always had, he had worked with Eddie Van Halen and worked with some other great rock guitarists. And Michael was always wanting to, you know, expand into other genres and other formats in that. And we were at Album Network putting our magazine out, and it was a Tuesday. And earlier in that day, I get a call from Harvey Leeds, who was the Epic Records promotion person, who said, "Hey, Tommy, Michael Jackson and Frank DeLeo want to come by the office to meet with you guys." And I'm like, "Oh, great. Love to. That's great. We're going to come by tonight." So Michael and Frank, who was a wonderful person, no longer with us, was just a tremendous guy. They came by the office, and our friend, the late Art Phillips, went to meet them downstairs. And as Art met them and was starting to bring them up, we all kind of came down to meet Michael, and Michael pulls on Frank's arm and goes, "Uncle Frank, I gotta pee." And we're like, "Oh, no, no worries. You come on upstairs. You can go to the bathroom." He goes, "No, no, you don't understand. I gotta pee now." And so Michael went, we had a parking garage, and he went to the back and peed in the garage
no.
on the wall there. And we're like, holy shit, we're going to have to like have that like, you know, memorialized.
Framed.
And so that was how it started. And, you know, he came up and was talking basically about, you know, crossing into the rock world and how he could do that. It was mm-hmm. very charming, very nice. Got to meet him a couple of other times after that too. But on his way out, when we were done with our meeting and that, Michael goes going outside. And as he opened the door, there was a kid on a skateboard that Michael ran into and the kid fell down.
Oh my God.
And Michael's like, oh my God, are you okay? Are you okay? And this kid looks up and goes, Michael Jackson? And I'm thinking, can you imagine that kid goes to school the next day and go, Michael Jackson ran into me last night when I was skateboarding by a building in Burbank. And I was just like, what an end to the story, how it started and how it finished that night. And it's just like one of these things that I'll always remember and treasure that, you know, he came up and visited.
Oh my God. What a great story. And if it had happened today, you know what the ending would have been. We're suing Michael Jackson.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
He bumped into me or he peed on the wall.
That's funny. So yeah, you got that story, and I may steal that one back for my book when and if I ever write one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Paul Rappaport was very, you know, he didn't want to give me too many stories because he's saving them for his
book.
Yeah,
I can't wait to see that because Rap, you know, what a great guy Rap was. You know, many stories and many bands that I loved working with him on, including a band called The Outfield, who I loved and think that one of the most underrated bands that were out there on Columbia Records that, you know, then they went to MCA, I think, after that. But what a great band and, you know, just some super music from them. And they don't get near the credit, I think, that they deserve.
And do you have any cool stories?
They put me in a video once with them. Not so much cool stories with them, mm-hmm. just liking their music and, you know, was happy to be able to work and promote them. And, you know, like having a great label guy like Rap and a manager that they had at the time named Kip Crones, who was another super, super guy. Just, you know, you remember some of these things. And Tiffany, there's so many different bands, as you know, that, you know, we were blessed to be able to work throughout the times that, you know, and the 20 years that I spent at Album Network, I had some of the greatest relationships with the people that brought me in with, mm-hmm. you know, Steve Smith and the Bird Brothers, mm-hmm. Eli and Bruce and Gary. And of course, I love, there's a certain guy there too that's still around named Neil Bird, who, you know, I got to work with and hopefully mentor a bit through his career as he did syndication in that for us.
Yeah, with Mark Felsot.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was a great team.
And Mark, you know, the Tom Petty channel and that with, you know, he did.
Tom Petty Radio.
Some great, great people that worked there. And through the years there, I think everybody that worked there, if you ask them what was the best job you ever had, and I think everybody would all agree, the time that we spent at the Album Network, and it was tremendous.
Yeah, I did spend some time there,
you
so I know
as,
how much
you
fun
did
it was.
As well too.
Yeah, a lot of people will say the same.
And there, and if Jim Nelson was listening, he would say, "Tommy, there you go. You just said it again. As well too." It was something that I always kind of looked at, you know, I had a habit of saying it sometimes instead of just cutting it off as well.
I've never heard that. And, you know, off the cuff, I know you had a television career, however short it may have been, but it was a good story.
My 15 minutes of fame.
It was the best story ever. Oh. How did you get that?
Well, all right, so there's a guy named John Scott.
Oh.
You might have known him. Your dad, maybe?
Not sure.
And, you know, he would always promote the TJ Martell Foundation and raise millions and millions of dollars for such an amazing charity. They did so much great work. And one of the things that they did at one point was they had, you know, silent auctions. And one of the prizes was, you know, a walk-on on the show Married with Children.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the show, and I was like, all right, I gotta do something with this. So I bidded and bought the part.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it was time to do the show and the taping, I reached out to the producers of the show and said, look, I want to let you know, I have a syndicated radio show. We're on 150 radio stations across the country, and I'll promote the shit out of this episode and Married with Children on our show, but I want a speaking role.
Oh my God.
And they said, well, we'll get back to you. And, you know, they did. And they came back and said, you got it. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to be Elmo, and you're going to hit on Peg and Marcy in a bar. And it was an opening scene, and it was like big lines coming in there. And I walk up to them in a leisure suit with my big, curly, furry hair down to my shoulders. And they're in a bar in Vegas. And I walk up to Peg and Marcy and go, so, gals, who wants to ride the wild Elmo? And they, I forget which one, headbutts me, and I walk away and, you know, go to the next table and hit on two girls there.
Oh my God. That was awesome.
That's my 15 minutes of fame. And it's funny because I still get residual checks for that, you know, because I, you know, since I had lines,
you had to
I
become was a SAG paid, member.
Exactly. And to this day, I still get about, I don't know, 10 bucks a year.
Oh, that's pretty good.
You know, for that one role.
That's pretty good. I think it's better than I get.
And I get to show my friends sometimes when they come by, oh, look at this here.
Right. So, right. That's so
a funny thing to say the least.
And how many times did you get it in one take?
Yeah, it was one take.
One take?
I was always one take Tommy.
One take Tommy.
And so much that I used to say, you know, look at, I think Elmo should have his own series
right
after that. And, you know, unfortunately,
they didn't
see the talent that I imagined I had.
We all know you have talent.
Thank you.
So did you talk to Christina at the time?
Yes, I did. And Christina was everybody on the show is great, but Christina Applegate had a great relationship and still to this day to her father, Bobby, who is, you know, you talk about a legend in the music business, and, you know, he has been an influence in so many people's careers. And Christina knew that, you know, we spoke that, you know, her dad and I were good friends and that, and, you know, she was as cool as can be at the time when she was in her role, and, you know, you see what
thing.
She did, just such an amazing job in her career. My God, looking back at her, it's fantastic.
Yeah. She and Ed O'Neill did the softball game.
Yeah.
And you were also,
I was
at
in
the
that. Yeah. Yeah. Played at that. And we had so many different bands and, you know, band members that played at that. But, it, you know, again, it goes back to, you know, your father who raised millions of dollars, and, you know, I'll always be indebted for the fact that he helped my father-in-law get through some great doctors when my father-in-law was suffering with prostate cancer, and the T.J. Martell Foundation helped him out considerably. And, you know, God bless, my father-in-law is 92 years old right now and living in Seattle still, and, you know,
and doing well.
So thank you, John Scott.
Yeah, right.
I don't talk to him enough. Exactly. Tony Martell and, you know, the
You should give John a call. He hasn't heard from him in a while.
those bowling parties, those are some stories there too. I mean, that's like, you know.
Legendary.
Oh my God. We had so much fun at the bowling parties.
Legendary bowling parties. And so you're still in the music industry today in some capacity.
Yeah,
so tell us what you do now.
So I work for a tremendous company based out of London called Trafalgar Releasing. And we have been putting music events in movie theaters around the world, ranging from, well, you may have heard of Taylor Swift and Beyonce and the films that they did.
Not really.
And we worked alongside AMC and in doing international distribution with them, and have worked with the likes of BTS and Coldplay and Metallica and Billie Eilish and Tom Petty and Rush and many, many different bands. We just did Ghost, who is a fantastic hard rock band that's so cinematic, and put their concert film up in theaters just a few weeks ago, and it was tremendous. And, you know, working with K-pop superstars Blackpink right now, and others that we'll be bringing out, though. But over the last 10 years, I've been working in the event cinema space, and have been blessed to still have a seat at the table in the business and content acquisition and that, and been a lot of fun with some tremendous, tremendous people. And my colleague out of Denver, Kimberly Free, who runs the content and acquisitions division there, is our senior VP. It's been a pleasure and just great to continue working with a company that's got so many good people and so many good things that we can do in the music world.
And how does it differ from when you first started in the music industry? How does it differ today?
It's different today. I mean, look, the world of social media is so important now, where it used to be just, what kind of airplay is this band getting? Well, now, what are your socials like? What are you doing with, Facebook and TikTok and X, and do people still call X Twitter? I mean, you can't help yourself sometimes on that. And Instagram and everything that's out there, and looking at how all that works in today's world. And it's funny, I go back to a time when I worked in Syracuse at a great radio station called 94 Rock in the early 80s, which was one of the best times I ever had in my life. Also, when it comes to radio, we had some great, great stuff that we did and just covered all of New York State outside of New York City proper, like a blanket with 100,000 watts. And it was a great time that we had there, and just, amazing to see how that worked. I had, and it's funny because I was asked to come back to go to Syracuse University and speak. And the question came up was like, what do you suggest people do to get in the music business? And this was pre-internet and that. And at Album Network, everything was so computer driven. Mm-hmm. We were like putting things in the computer. And my answer was, you want to really learn how to type.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and people looked at me like, what are you on Mars? What does that mean? And, I think the rest is kind of history as to where it is today, mm-hmm. knowing the social media world and, the skills needed and that. But, look, some people say radio isn't needed as much as it used to be, and maybe that's true, but still looks pretty solid to me. And, look, concert and touring has had a little bit of a challenge with, issues with Ticketmaster or this or that, and whether it's just or unjust, mm-hmm. there's a healthy, vibrant touring business at all levels still going on, as far mm-hmm. as I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And any new artists that you like today?
Well, thank God, my daughter Allie in particular, my mm-hmm. son Nick turned me on to a lot of great stuff. And, I saw a great band that she turned me on to just not too long ago at the Troubadour, called Dead Poets Society. Mm-hmm. Went in there and saw a lot of old friends that are working the promotion and working with the label and working with the band, and their manager, Jeremy Hammond's a hell of a guy too. And just, that's a group with, I think, a really bright future. And it's funny because, having my daughter come in and take me there not too long ago, before the pandemic, I took her into the Troubadour to see one of my all-time favorite bands mm-hmm. that was getting back together, and that's the Black Crowes.
Oh.
And she enjoyed that. And I said, get ready to go in to see the Black Crowes. It was like going to church.
Yeah.
And, we had a great one and, great history with that band too.
We got to see a private show, I believe, with the Black Crowes during the Album Network days.
We promoted the Black Crowes and had a lot of fun stuff. And you want to talk about a story, if I could share
please
a Black Crowes story. And it's funny because, and again, there's the Van Halen tie-in. David Lee Roth's manager and a man that used to do a lot of their video work was Pete Angelus, and Pete managed Dave when Dave left the band. Pete also then managed the Black Crowes. And now the Black Crowes are managed by my longtime friend, Mark Dedea. Mm-hmm. And we were taken into Houston back in the Black Crowes day when they were, they were really cranking it out and rocking it through the 90s and that, and checking into my hotel room. As I got into the room, I guess Pete, their manager, and Mark and Chris and Rich decided they wanted to pull a little joke on me.
No.
And as I checked into the hotel room and threw my bags on the bed, I noticed there was like some lumps on the foot of the bed. And what the hell is this? I took the sheets back, and there were these two giant, ugly fish.
What?
And Pete wanted to send me a message jokingly. Hey, you're going to sleep with the fishies tonight, Nast.
Oh, my God.
And it was funny, but we had some fun times with the Black Crowes. And we did some radio stuff with them out of Europe, I believe, too. And, you know, always had a fun time with them. When they got back together, and it was great to see Chris and Rich connecting again, because I think that they are stupendous and, you know, always will be one of my favorite bands who came through big time with what they do. I love seeing them. And to be able to share that with my daughter at the time, too, was just like,
and
you know,
seeing them. Yeah, was great. Together.
And, yeah. And I love a lot of the stuff that's going on in the country world today. There's so many great bands from, you know, Cody Johnson and Cole Swindell and, you know, the Zach Brown band and Zach Bryan. And, you know, my son Nick keeps me up on a lot of the stuff with that, too. So, you know, trying to listen and see what's happening with, you know, in today's world, there's like a good to see the country, rock, and hip hop world kind of marrying, from Beyonce doing country albums and Jelly Roll crossing over and Hardy, who's another great band that has had great success at country and at rock. It's great to see that happening and good stuff going on in today's music world.
And do you have any advice for anybody who would like to become a musician, get into a band, anything like that?
Learn to type. No. You know what, Tiffany? It's like, your social media is so important today. And, you know, just being responsible on how you do that. And, hey, look, listen to classic rock, R&B, listen to the past, listen to the present, and see what you can create as a musician that will translate into the future. Get a fan base, tour. It's important to have some patience and come up with good songs. And I guess in today's world, though, too, you don't need to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to record an album. People do it without major labels at this time and, you know, it can do pretty well with it. So it's just stay true to your heart and listen to some of the great influences, because there are some spectacular bands that still translate today. I mean, I'll always love the Beatles and say that they were my all-time favorite band from the time that I, you know, saw them as a kid on the Ed Sullivan Show. And it's funny, and today when I tell you about working with putting music events in movie theaters around the world, one of the things that influenced me too about that was seeing the Beatles did a show back in the 60s that was on closed circuit TV that was broadcast into the theaters then. And it was the Beatles and the Beach Boys and Leslie Gore. And, you know, and as a kid, my parents dropped me off at the theater. I got to see it and my friends were screaming and yelling like everybody. And, you know, that'll always stick with me, and seeing how something like that works in movie theaters. It's a great thing, because it's this, especially today, the sound and the sight of it all are spectacular. It's a great way to see a great concert.
It seems like there aren't a lot of bands like there were then today.
I know it, and it's easy to say, oh, the music of the 60s and the 70s was the best. And, you know, there are some great bands that have come through still too, from Loverboy to the Foo Fighters. I mean, you look at what the Foo Fighters have done today, and arguably they're probably the best rock band out there, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and bands that still have an influence, and how U2 has made the Sphere in Vegas such an amazing place to see something at now, a whole new music destination going on at this point now.
Yeah, it's fabulous. It's like Elvis had it, but, you know, now it's different. U2 and the Sphere, it's all incredible. Yeah.
Never got to meet Elvis, but boy, oh boy, was he awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. He was just in a class by himself.
Exactly.
And I do have that question now, if you want to answer that question.
Sure, absolutely.
So my friend Jamie Nevis actually submitted this question. She lives in West Hills, California. She would like to know, What was Eddie Van Halen really like?
One thing that stands out to me about Eddie was his sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And when we did the album premiere, when they launched with Gary Cherone, we did it at the Key Club on the Sunset Strip in Hollywood and did a national radio broadcast, and the band played, as well as going through their new album. And I did the show, I hosted the show and interviewed the band. And when I brought the band out, well, Eddie comes in and his sense of humor was hilarious. He has the crew bring out a toilet. And they took my chair and threw my chair out and said, Tommy, here's where you're going to sit.
No.
And he brought a toilet out there. And Eddie masterminded this whole thing.
Oh, my God.
And at the end of the show, and I did the whole show sitting on the toilet.
No, you didn't.
Doing the interview with him. He gave me a toilet lighter that he had signed that I think I have somewhere stashed. It was like, hey, man, thanks for doing all this.
And, oh, my God.
You know, but he was a great guy. I have great memories of him. Loved his sense of humor. And you know, he and Alex was great. Just, I can't say enough about the Van Halen brothers. And, you know, miss Eddie today. And his influence will live in this world for years and years and years to come. And so happy to see Wolfgang, you know, do what he's doing. Oh, my God. I mean, and he's sticking to his guns and doing his music his way.
Absolutely.
And I respect that so much and think he's just tremendous and hope he continues going down the path he is.
Yeah, that's awesome. I agree. He is really talented. And thanks to Jamie Nevis of West Hills, California. She is a friend of the show.
Great. Well, Jamie,
Patreon.
I hope I answered okay for you.
Yeah, I'm sure she'll love it. I'm sure. I'm going to have to say that, like, I think people are going to want to know more about you and more about what you've done. You have so many great stories, but I think you should do the outro for me and do that, you know, give a good radio voice. Give it your best radio that
well,
you
well,
see.
All right? I can tell you is, Tiffany, to be able to be on the Hidden History of Rock and Roll and work with you, I want to thank you for joining me on this today. You can find the show, too, on Spotify, Amazon, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, and on Patreon. Become a friend of the show on Patreon and get your questions answered by our next guest.
Thank you, Tommy Nast. You've been amazing.
Thank you for having me.
You've been great. Thanks.
Awesome.
We hope you enjoyed the latest installment of the Hidden History of Rock and Roll. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on all the podcast platforms. Thanks for listening to the Hidden History of Rock and Roll with your host, Tiffany Scott.